bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, that's me, everybody.
Gentlemen, there is a very, very kind of cool thing that's under NASA just signed an agreement, and the agreement is to start putting the International Space Station into doing more commercial stuff. So they signed an agreement with Houston-based Axiom Space to put in a module that will be a privately controlled module for space exploration research, probably tourism, et cetera. Axiom is interesting because it's led by a lot of former NASA people. They've got advisors like, you know, the former head of NASA. They've got a bunch of really cool people involved with it. They even got Philip Stark, the designer, to work with them on this thing. But what's cool is I sent a video to Bryce that Scott Manley does wonderful space coverage. And what's cool about this module is they're going to attach the module, and it's going to have its own like power supply and other stuff. And then they're going to expand on it. And then when the space station, the ISS, gets decommissioned, it will just detach and separate and become its own space station, according to plan.
Oh, wow. That exactly answers the immediate question that pops into my head, which is, man, at some point, I assume it's going to be more worth it to start another space station because, you know, if you attach to it, it'd be like, well, this ain't going to last forever. But I assume right now, this is probably a lot like city building or outpost building, where it's like you don't want to recreate everything from scratch. If you can, you should just plug into, you should build a house and then attach to the city water, not go out into the middle of nowhere and bring a tank.
Because, you know, there are a lot of other things, logistics things that we don't even think about when it comes to, let's say, you've got the space station, you've got the comm system, you've got already established, you know, this thing's almost 20 years old. You've got, you know, all this infrastructure that goes into this is what we do at this point of the orbit. This is how we maintain that. So by putting another station attached to it, and then the idea at some point that station still takes up that orbit or whatever, or the infrastructure or part of it at least, is, I think, a very, you know, interesting approach. I've heard it costs like $1 billion a year to maintain the ISS. So, yeah, we'll see what happens over time.
Think about this. Imagine, let's say it becomes affordable enough that all of a sudden Hilton throws up a pod, you know, Marriott, they're all probably the same company, whatever. But the point is you have all these pods, and then at some point it becomes worth it for them to just create another infrastructure skeleton and just, you know, dozens of these pods just detach and then go to the new digs and congratulations, we're a brand new hotel.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because certainly space tourism is going to be part of what Axiom's doing, and it's sort of like the low hanging fruit and kind of the fruit that probably just rolls under the front of the orchard, and we go, oh, look, fruit, but really the real fruit's something else. But that will be a part of it, certainly part of their business plan, and I'm curious to see at what point, like, who do they say gets to go and who doesn't go? You know, who do they say? You know, yeah. What are clearances like for that? You know, what happens is as far as, you know, if, you know, the guy who did Girls Gone Wild made a big comeback and had a ton of money and he's like, hey, I want to go there with this friend of mine, Charlie.
This is the libertarian argument, is because at some point you have to pick winners and losers with very, very scarce government, you know, permission slots or whatever. That's crazy.
Watching the video here, but it is really, really remarkable to watch just exactly how modular this is and how, like, piece by piece they are just looking to build their own, Lego brick by Lego brick space station that they can eventually just detach from. It is such a remarkable idea.
Anyway. Yeah, no, it's cool. There's like a little robotic arm that's on the outside attaching and moving things around. And then you see a thing. They have a really cool thing too underneath it. There's a thing, a cupola, which is where like this big glass window thing, you can go in there and get like this amazing view of the Earth.
As a matter of fact, most people have seen the existing cupola that does give this exquisite view, but this one is deeper to where your entire physical body can be all the way in it. Like, imagine just, man, the sensation of just floating with an unbroken 360, like, I guess a hemispherical view of everything around you. God, that would be extraordinary.
Yeah, and what's cool too is they show they have like these sort of these metal like shutters that come in and close over it because all of the glass there. And I think there's, you don't want to leave that exposed when you don't have to. But it's fascinating. So Virgin Galactic had its IPO a few months back, and Virgin Galactic, which is co-owned or started by Richard Branson, and they're the ones that are planning to do a lot of orbital flights, you know, not orbital yet. They don't have an orbital craft yet, but they're going to do suborbital, hop on board this the new version of the spaceship too, get dropped from the airplane, go up to space, the space line, and then coast back down. And they're also going to get into eventually they want to do like launching orbital craft and satellite stuff. But as far as I know, like, I mean, their primary business is going to be the space tourism thing. They had their IPO and they hit like, this is insane. This is absolutely insane because they are not actually, they're taking orders, but they're not actually flying, you know, paid customers yet to my, you know, not on, certainly not if they're doing some other space services, I'm unaware of it, but they're at $7 billion is their market cap right now.
Jesus.
Okay. And this is a company that,
I guess the bet there is that this genre is real, right? So you're not worrying about it being speculative, and they're going to have the brand even if they just reskin or take on some other company that does more, you know, a different technical solution than they are now. They're always going to be front of mind because Virgin is this forward facing brand that's been in this space forever.
Yeah, I Tesla had this amazing big run up, right? Tesla is now, you know, Tesla stock is going at what is it? It had a drop today, but it's still like over twice when Elon had said, you know, made the infamous 420 comment. And people were criticizing the run on Tesla because when you compare a traditional car company and you look at those metrics, it's valued at $156 billion. You go like, that's insane. That's crazy. But on the Tesla side, you go like, well, they make a product. They're selling this product. They make another product, these power walls and these energy solutions, which is probably actually their much bigger part of what they're going to do. And you can kind of say like, well, you can extrapolate that and maybe some, you know, like on my part, some very fanciful thinking, who knows? But you could say why this is going to be worth so much what it is. With Virgin Galactic, I'm still like I'm just scratching my head going like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd that they're launching without a product. Like for whatever you can say, you know, about Tesla makes a product that people like. You can question how many of them they put out and whether or not they keep their promises and whether or not they can continue to create new versions of that. But Virgin Galactic, as of now, has not put anybody into space, and their job is to put people into space.
And I am very happy for them. I'm very, very happy there's a lot of capital going into space. Very, very happy. I want to make that very, very clear. I'm very, very happy for that. But I was like, holy cow. And we get into a whole nother talk at some point, like how there's part of what's happening too in the markets is you have these like these sovereign wealth funds, which have like total combined like trillions of dollars and stuff. And they have to put money somewhere. And if you come up with this really, it's why you had Uber had a crazy valuation. That was what SoftBank was trying to do with WeWork and whatnot. SoftBank had this thing called Vision Fund 1, which was what started Uber and stuff. And this is the one where the Saudi prince MSB showed up, spent 45 minutes talking to the Japanese head of its son, 45 minutes, and gave him $45 billion to invest in stuff. And the total size of the fund's insane. And so that's where a lot of this sort of stuff comes from. They're like, oh, $2 billion on this crazy venture, which may flame out or start a galactic empire. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's so. Also, I would imagine there's a bias for the tangible versus the intangible. Now, on the one hand, they don't actually have a product, as you point out. But if what you have is a strong hunger to spend money on the privatization of space travel, what games are there in town? I mean, where can you put that money if what you want to do is cheer for privatized space travel?
Yeah, which is why I'm Brian. I'm sorry. I'm going to break the news. We're officially announcing the launch of Brushwood Spaceport in Austin, Texas, and now available for business and funding. So just so you know,
that's right. No, I would suspect that there is a bias of whoever is first, whether you're good or not. You know, like
when the Virgin brand too.
Yes. And also, I can't remember if this is an old story that resurfaced or if they made a recent announcement, but they're doing private Vomit Comet rides out of Las Vegas, I believe, for I think like $120,000, $160,000 a pop. You can have the whole cabin to yourself. So there are some kind of products there, but not even the base level entry stuff they were talking about.
Yeah, I know their vision is probably encompassing travel and a lot of other things too. And again, I'm very happy. I've met some of the people involved with some of the principals involved with Virgin Galactic before, and I'm very, very thrilled for that. And I'm even going, whoa, wow, that's intense.
That's a lot. And I would just reiterate that I think that is a bigger indicator of the investors' enthusiasm for the subject than it is a referendum on what they have or the reliability of.
As soon as you watch those rockets go up and come back, I think that's the biggest thing where it's like, all right, someone's going to do this. Like, so this seems like as good of an early bet as any to do it. Although I'm kind of with the haters on this one in that, like, man, you know, it's going to be the first wild space tourism company, the ones that puts people up in space. so far, yet to find somebody to cross that rubric.
Yeah. Well, there's SpaceX has got a partnership now. Hit the SpaceX bingo, guys. I said the name. They signed an agreement for actually doing tourists on like their Falcon rockets and stuff, because apparently there's some demand. And SpaceX will say, like, they'll, like, if a partner wants to come along and say, if you guys want to handle logistics and handle this thing, we'll provide the transportation, but we don't want to sort of, you know, diverge too much of our time. But it's very interesting to see what's happening there, because I think part of, I think, the Virgin Galactic run-up was the fact that there are many people looking at SpaceX going, man, SpaceX is completely privately held, and people wish they could get involved in there, particularly – you know, the biggest quiet story, which, you know, we've talked about a lot, though, is Starlink. And SpaceX is the largest owner of satellites in the world now. SpaceX owns more satellites in orbit than anybody else. And every few weeks, they're adding 60 more of these with the Starlink system for their internet. And, you know, the talk is that SpaceX may spin Starlink out as a for-profit company, do an IPO on that, and SpaceX own a majority of the stock or some portion like that, but as a way to make additional revenue and just feed the efforts of SpaceX, which if they do that, you want to talk about a crazy IPO.
If you own the railroad, you're also going to sell a lot of sandwiches and coffee, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of benefits that you have when you are the link between Earth and space.
Do we know whether or not there has ever been a Starlink launch that was dedicated just to Starlink launches, or have they been able to take advantage of spare bandwidth on other commercial gigs?
No, they've been doing their own now. They've been doing their own, and their own as the primary launch customer, because they're reusing the boosters, because now they're using these second and third use boosters like that. And sometimes they've been using sometimes some fairings that have been used before. Their costs, you know, we know what their published costs are for what these things are. But when SpaceX does one of these launches internally, you know, a lot less, because sometimes it comes down to like the orbit they have to get things into.
Sure.
And that's where, but they've, I think they did some tests, but I think these are exclusively theirs.
But and I guess, like, if somebody knocked on the door and says, hello, I understand you have a 7-acre production facility, I would like to launch a podcast, there is a number I will quote them, and we will schedule time on the calendar, and there will be a producer, and they can use the equipment and all that stuff. Whereas if I wake up tomorrow and say, yeah, I want to launch another podcast, my expenses will be very, very different than what I would quote that outside person.
Yep. Very true. And because a big part of that is having done it for multiple years, you know exactly what you need to spend, you know, all that sort of stuff, plus the sunk cost. So very exciting time. You know, it's also an exciting time to support the Weird Things podcast.
Hell yeah, Andrew. Everybody head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. That's where you can support this very show. Head on over there right now. Kick us a little coin. Make sure that we keep talking about science and the strange goings-on of this very world each and every week. That is patreon.com/weirdthings.
So let's do a little bit of talk about what the big news of the day is.
Is it box office returns? Oh, no, it's the Rotten Tomatoes score on Sonic the Hedgehog.
Man, I wish it was that.
Oh.
I don't know if you looked at the stock market, and you got six dead people in Italy now from COVID-19.
Oh.
And there was an odd thing where Iran had two cases, and then Iran had two fatalities, which says that maybe they were using lead therapy.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about. I don't know why I hadn't even entertained this terrible thought of some countries might resort to draconian, shall we say, highly efficient but highly unethical ways to secure their own health.
I don't want to go too dark here, Brian, but you know what we haven't heard about, and what apparently one of the biggest vectors for infection is prisons. And I don't know if you know what China has a lot of.
Oh, man. Oh, that's terrifying to consider. I read The Stand. I know where this goes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Oh, gosh.
Is it zombie prisoners? Is that what?
In the book The Stand, there's a super flu, and 99.99% of people are infected, but some are immune. And there is a character who is incarcerated, and just everyone in the prison died, but him, and there he is.
It's also that book, but they do that. There's a character like that on Last Man on Earth.
Oh, is there?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That Last Man on Earth, a very good show about that same exact premise.
So the problem is like when we watch movies about like virus epidemics and stuff like this, is that, you know, the impact we see is like people kind of falling down left and right and whatever. And again, Contagion is a really terrifying, but you know, the details they put into that were really quite good. The thing that we don't get addressed as much probably has to do with, because Hollywood doesn't grasp economics, is that even something with a low mortality rate, which is pretty high if it's somebody you know who dies, obviously, but even something with a low mortality rate, the impact, and we're seeing that. Like, I'm involved with a project where we needed to get some parts from it, and we're like we know, like, we look to see the time, delivery time is 2 to 3 weeks, and we're like, we can't order that because we know 2 to 3 weeks means that's coming out of China, and we know that estimate right now is highly variable. And so we have to source it from somewhere else. And that was just a small impact.
On the scam stuff side, we've already had multiple products that we are going to have to full on run out of, because they they're straight up about it. They're all like, yeah, just double all of your expected times because of COVID.
Yeah, there's we have a friend. I don't know if he wants his business out there, but he like is going to run dry on custom made products out of China that. There's no, we're going to be back online doing this time. Like, and we are going to, we are far closer than anybody would like to the season in which you start actually buying stuff for like Christmas.
Yeah.
And everything. And, based on even just the delays now, of, you know, America or other parts of the world are not set up to even take on the kind of burden that China has in terms of manufacturing. So I think there's a reason why we saw the stock market take a big poop today, because this is really bad for the supply chain. This is like the likes of which we have never really seen.
Yeah, and that's the part of the concern comes from watching it spread to other places. There's the awareness that perhaps the Chinese government maybe wasn't fully open with what was going on, which
I do seem to remember one of us panelists pointing out that it was awfully curious that they were publicly saying only like a few people had died while simultaneously building giant hospitals for the stated purpose of only handling this disease.
You know, there was just, they had a lot of need for capacity there. And so, and that's one of the problems is this, is like, I had a conversation with a friend's father the other day. And I was talking about, you know, that in China, I'm like, the good thing about China is because, you know, they have so much control, they can stop these things. I'm like, no, the problem with China is because they're totalitarian. It means all the bureaucrats lie to each other so they can keep their jobs. Nobody wanted an outbreak. Nobody wanted this to happen. So everybody lied to their higher ups about what's going on. So nobody there knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And that's the problem in Russia. You watched the Soviet Union collapse because they were lying to themselves about economic figures. China does that, but had such a growing economy, it could take up so much slack for that. But then when it came to this, we just all of a sudden saw this is like the big chink in the armor is the fact that you have this information, this fear of information flowing up because of reprisals and losing power. And so, oh, you know, it's scary. Well, it's like
the big number that it will just take time to get to is, you know, we of course can measure deaths very, very easily. But at what point do you declare somebody who got the disease, got through it, and is okay? Like how last time I checked in on this, it looked like it was about four times more deadly than a bad flu. But I don't know if that's changed since the last time I looked at that.
So we're still trying to figure out what the mortality rates are because the information is a little bit variable. They had a case where they had somebody who was infected, who was in like I think one of the was it the Diamond Princess, one of the people on board there, was tested clear of it, went home, and then they found particles. They found, you know, they found the viral particles in her blood supply. They found out that she actually still had it. Was it high enough levels to be infectious? They weren't. No, but they were like, they would not have let her go had they known that it's behaving in a different way than we're used to.
And I have to believe right now, you know, people are hard at work at a vaccine. How fast is the turnaround on that? I mean, we know we could get stuff sequenced quickly, but it's perpetually a game of trying to guess, you know, where the flu is headed.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big effort's going towards that. There's also once you believe you have it, I've read somewhere they're doing like monkey trials or something now to measure stuff. Then it's how do you figure out how safe is this thing? If it's something that's pretty close to something else you've used before, then you know that you're not as concerned. Then there's the manufacture of that. We've seen that with flu season where we've had like, you know, oh, it's a bigger, worse flu season than before, and we don't have enough, you know. And that was, we've improved the technology by which we can make like, you know, flu vaccines, which is good. But...
Holy cow. Like, so right now we're seeing, man, how quickly. Look, I don't want to play into media sensationalism. I think in general it's not helpful and you end up shaping the way you interact with the world in unhelpful ways. However, if you're looking to scare yourself silly, remember just 4 weeks ago when it was like 2,000 or 3,000 reported and now we're at total confirmed of 80,000? Total deaths at 2,600, total recovered 25,000. Where are we seeing this from?
This is the Johns Hopkins interactive dashboard. So they have a heat map of cases where they've been found in countries as well as reported deaths, infections, and recovered.
It doesn't help that it looks exactly like the interface to Virus LLC or Virus Inc.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so... the issue here too is like this is each country self-reporting on what's going on there. And I know like Friday there was a bit of a hullabaloo over the fact that like China was supposed to report their numbers at a certain point, and then they took longer to report them. They've changed the way they do diagnoses as far as saying there were many people who were suspect cases but weren't officially diagnosed with it, so they weren't necessarily in the data. We've also watched if you look at the mortality rate, you know, it. Assuming these numbers are right, which we know statistically speaking they are not, and I'm going to tell you another frightening fact in a moment, but it was a month, it was 3 weeks ago, whatever, where it said, hey, it's got a mortality rate of less than 2%. Now the mortality rate of this, according to this data, is 3.3%. I mean, it's, you know, it's 3%, which
it's only double as bad as we thought it was.
Yeah. And there's so much bad information out there and I don't want to be a spreader of that sort of thing, but it is the thing of it's wash your hands, you know, all that sort of stuff and be careful, but also like, don't start panicking and stuff. I've heard it speculated that if you look at the statistics coming out of China and they look suspiciously exactly like what an algorithm would show you and not what natural variation would show you in the
And keep in mind,
the only thing that I would say statistically is that I don't trust the number of reported cases that is coming from the Chinese government. I think the only question that you would have to have is, by what multiple you want to inflate the number that they are officially putting out there, and you have to wonder whether or not you can also trust the amount of deaths that they are reporting from this specific virus. So maybe there are many more people infected, and the death number is close to right, because that's harder to hide. And maybe it's less deadly just based on the fact that they're misreporting their numbers. But still, this is something that is spreading at a level that I think should make everybody uncomfortable.
I am 100% on the same page as all of you guys, but someone out there might say, well, why do you have to assume they're lying? Even if you don't want to assume that they're lying, understand that humans have a bias to anchor things. There are fringe cases that they can either say, yes, definitely COVID-19, or too soon to call. And it's like, and you will unconsciously react to the bias of the expected curve, especially when there are incentives all around you, including keeping your job or making it look like your hospital is doing a good job or a bad job. There's all of these human reasons that you might just nudge that closer to the expected outcome.
I would say that all organizations report numbers that are the most favorable to them, right? Mm-hmm. The difference is that in governments that have a free press, in businesses, the ability to leak numbers that are accurate is fairly simple, right? I mean, in America, it's as easy as creating a Twitter burner account and tagging the right journalists, right? You could put that out on Main Street in a few seconds and be relatively secure, depending on exactly what information you're transmitting. That is not the case in China. They control it.
And so we had like a week ago, China had released a number of new cases, which we saw that spike, which Bryce just showed in the graph for everybody who's listening. And people took that as like, hey, that's a helpful sign that China's being more straightforward and honest with it, which I hope is the case. My concern is, you know how like Facebook will be like, hey, a small number of accounts were accidentally exposed through some sort of security thing, but only a few people were affected. They do that announcement, they do that big release, and quietly 3 weeks later they go, oh, it turns out more people than we realized were affected. And it always turns out that it's like a small number goes to, oh, it's 500 million people and stuff. And that's the thing, that's a pattern now. You'll see like, oh, we'll give them some bad news. We'll give people some bad news and they'll go, oh, it's bad. We knew there was bad news coming, but it's not as bad as we thought. And then 2 weeks later, you realize, no, it's way worse than you thought. But people go, oh, no, we knew this, right? You know, it's how we kind of like, you know, Facebook's great at gaslighting people that way. And they didn't invent that. But, you know, again, not to, you know, point fingers, but it is a scary thing for their economy, because whatever concerns are we have there, they're talking about like, you know, right now, oh, it'll be like a $200 billion impact on their economy. That's on the low side. That is on the low side, because the lasting, like, Brian, where are you going to be sourcing your stuff in the future?
I mean, I'll tell you what, I'll be looking for that good old made in the USA sticker on a whole bunch of stuff, which I don't want to get all politicky on there, but man, how small does a trade tariff sound compared to the impact that this is going to have on the economy of China?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it just the all of those, you know, all of that, you know, factor together, and it's.
It's weird, because like you find yourself unironically Googling stuff like, well, how long can the disease stay alive on a piece of equipment purchased from a factory that's been infected with COVID? And last I read, it was 7 days, but awfully early. Who knows?
Yeah, and it's just. You know, the hopefully this is a wake up call. We need to be doing a lot more as far as trying to mitigate these things, developing technologies for this, because we got off easy previously with, you know, avian flu and SARS and stuff like this. And those were scary. And, you know, this is bigger, and hopefully, you know, will resolve itself quickly.
Well, yeah. And I think that there is a level for an international body. And that was one of the initial criticisms with the Chinese government. And I haven't followed up on this, if this is still going on, but they were not allowing the World Health Organization to come in and even assess numbers of the situation. And I think that when you look at how interconnected we all are, this is like baseline information. Is something that we need. like the global, the world needs as fast as possible on stuff like this at the very least.
Yeah. So I want to slightly shift just to sort of well, we're going to go now to weird things preppers. any advice or suggestions for people just in general? Because like I went from living in Florida, like Justin did, and we had, you know, you would always have, generally you would try to have enough water. You knew water was one of things that would run out quickly and be, you know, go bad. You tried to have enough food there. In a hurricane, you know, your worst case scenario is that you might be out with power for months, which could be bad. But you know that maybe a week or two, there'll be food coming from other parts of the country, right? You know, you'll get food coming in from somewhere else. So, you know, you want to last a certain amount of time, you know, after the hurricane goes through, whatever, it takes a certain amount of time to get services through. But beyond that, rest of the country's there. California with an earthquake, you know, it's the same sort of situation where I try to have enough preparations and stuff like this on hand at any given time should something happen that, you know, we can last long enough for, you know, FEMA to come in and fix things. With people getting sick and stuff like this, it's not at the rates right now. This is not a thing where it's everybody's falling down the streets. It's primarily affecting people who are already sick and the elderly and whatnot. It's people, most everybody's going to be healthy. And, you know, the problem though is that it will spread and make people sick. So you're going to get work slowdown and supply chain slowdown and stuff like that. And so what advice do you have for people on that?
Save money. Because you're right. I think this is a slow motion disaster, not one where all of a sudden you're not going to be able to have clean drinking water. A lot of the things that you use on a regular basis or expect to have available suddenly are just going to get real expensive. And so now's a good time to secure that cash. In a true overnight disaster, you'll get some people saying invest in gold or whatever, but it's like when Katrina hits, nobody's looking for gold doubloons or Krugerrands or bearer bonds or whatever. Beaches. Yeah, they're looking for clean water and food and medicine and baby formula and that kind of stuff. But I because this is going to be a slow rolling thing, it seems like the safest thing you could do is to be liquid and be ready to take action and expect to pay more for things and wait longer for them.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you've looked on Amazon for the price of breathing masks, MREs, you know, and other stuff. Like you can buy, like they'll have like breathing masks. Oh, it's $40, $200 shipping.
Wow.
And that's not, those are the third market sellers doing that.
Sure.
There's also been this weird like thing around this exercise game. Do you guys know about this? So there's this exercise game on the Switch and it comes with a yoga ring and you do all the exercise with it. Apparently those are like a super hot ticket item in China now because people, if they're quarantined, they don't want to go out.
Right.
And so like the prices have like skyrocketed on reselling this, you know, exercise game.
Yeah, I got an email recently from somebody who sent in some ideas for Scam Nation saying like, hey, I'm an American, but I'm trapped here because of coronavirus. And so I'm just hanging out, going through your whole back catalog. Have you thought about this trick? What about this other trick or whatever? Like people are taking the voluntary quarantine very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Brian's been the one that's talked about this the most, the idea that the, you know, in the future, like stay home, play VR. And I'm looking at like, I wonder if you can buy a Quest now. What are Quests going for? What's an Oculus?
I'll tell you what, man, good time to invest if you got money laying around. Of course, you're putting into Facebook, which I guess that's only a small fraction of their whole biz. But I forgive me for putting a Pollyanna spin on this, but in all of human history, was there ever a time that, you know, what are we up to, 8 billion people now or so, that this many people were better equipped to handle the idea of staying home, continuing to keep the economy alive, continuing to keep things humming, but with the ability to massively reduce the exposure to each other for these viruses to get around?
I would say yes, but a dot dot. And that is that we went to a restaurant. My girlfriend and I went to a restaurant the other night, and the guy who runs the restaurant came over to the table. We always talked to him and talked about how not ordering food from China. Right. And the thing is that we can stay home, but the things we need to survive, and a lot of things, like they were getting things like ginger and other stuff like this, but a lot of those things come from other places. And You know, that's the, I guess that's sort of the concerning part is that, you know, we can stay in our house, but somebody's got to drive those trucks. Somebody's got to pick the produce. Somebody's got to bring that food from point A to point B, you know?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
Yeah. And the other thing is that we have near like instantaneous relative to human history travel internationally, right? Like, you know, there's, you know, I'm just, you know, being paranoid and thinking like, oh, wow. Like I've definitely been in three different places, all of which had a lot of international press attention. And I don't know how many people from China were out covering things in Iowa or in New Hampshire or in Nevada. But, you know, I would assume it's more likely than if I was just at a random place. But again, that's part of our interconnected community is that for a reasonable fee, you can get on a flight and be somewhere else. And there's a reason why Italy, of all places, you know, now has the, you know, the highest, they're like the hotspot in Europe because there's, you know, travel from mainland China to Milan.
How many cases in the United States are known at this point?
Let's see. America, 35.
That's 35 too many. What wow. is one? Is that Austin? Oh no, San Antonio. That's right. The one that's in the middle of Texas. That made the news recently. San Antonio.
Brent starts spraying lighter fluid over the studio. Right.
I'm like, shut it down! Shut it all down! I execute Operation Icarus.
Oh, I forgot Bryce.
Actually, I'll tell you, now that I look at that map, like there have been far more of these in the Bay Area than either in Des Moines or Manchester or Las Vegas. So maybe I do just need to get the hell out of here.
Oh, geez. So yeah. What a cheerful, weird things. there, any of you out there in some area where you have to be quarantined or stay home, and our thoughts are with you. And, you know, like, yeah, I have friends that have people over there and you hear stuff, but you just sort of want to filter everything and make sure that, you know, we just handle this in a reasonable, responsible way. By the way, Weird Things breathing masks, we're selling them for $500 a piece. Yeah. Level on our Patreon. Gentlemen, picks?
I got a pick. Good friends of ours, The Ice Cream Social. They're a great podcast, and I think folks should listen to it if they haven't given it a shot. I was on there yesterday, and the episode's out now. But if you have not listened to Ice Cream Social, then this would be a great time to do it, talking a lot about politics in the Nevada caucus, but they are they're hilarious folks.
Yeah, man, I got a pick. It's called 52 Random Weekend Projects for Building Inventors and Backyard Builders. You may have heard of my friend Grant Thompson, the king of random, who passed away last year in a terrible accident. But the team perseveres and goes on. Grant had most of a book finished, and he and his family, or his family and the team, are finally releasing it. And I reached out to them, and I explained just how soft the nonfiction market is for a New York Times bestseller. And I talked about the importance of building a legacy. You know, you build the Blank for Dummies or the Complete Idiot's Guide to Blank series with a successful launch. And it is my hope for them and their team and the legacy of Grant Thompson that this thing just blows the freaking roof off. They are in pre-order right now. So if you just go and type in Grant Thompson or King of Random in Amazon, it looks like it releases on Tuesday, March 10th. And man, it matters. All those pre-orders, you pull back that rubber band and it all snaps and shows up as purchases on the first day. This is the kind of thing that could be life-changing for all of the team that is looking to fill the void in our hearts for Grant Thompson.
Yeah. I have a pick. It's not as sentimental as that one, but I have been watching a new Netflix show. It's a special 3-week event called Love is Blind. Have you guys seen this Love is Blind thing on Netflix?
I've seen it jump up and shout at me, I think.
Yeah. The basic idea is, like, what if we took 10 people and put them in, like, that had them speed date, but also they could not see each other. So they go and they talk to each other through these big pods. And they have 10 days to find someone to get engaged to.
To actually get engaged to be married?
To get engaged to be married, yeah. And then they spend 30 days like living together between like a vacation in Mexico and meeting and moving in with each other before they get married. So the idea is that they start doing this. They keep calling it an experiment, which I think is weird because it definitely just looks like The Bachelor.
I'm sorry, which season of Black Mirror is this?
So I've only watched the first like two or three episodes, which is all of this pod stuff. But suppose like and that's the thing that they kind of hammer home is like they saw and met each other before meeting each other. They have to make their decisions before, you know, getting engaged. But there's supposedly much, much more beyond that. And I don't know. It's a nice little bit of kind of trashy TV. I think it's better than The Circle on Netflix, which is bad. This feels different. This kind of feels different, even though it's definitely like all really beautiful people.
The Circle was more of the emphasis was on them like catfishing each other and just like the havoc that bad actors can cause if they're trying to like hack the game, basically. And this seems more like a traditional will they find love in a bizarre contest kind of thing.
Yeah, and you definitely can feel that a lot of the people are really trying and really putting themselves out there. There's still some like reality-ness to it that is a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to launch a show called Mail Order Bride. And we give these guys catalogs of women from other countries, and you're going to flip through there. And
okay,
I'm on board. That was a thing that was done.
Yeah,
I don't. I just don't understand. I'm like Demolition Man now. I'm like the three shells. I don't understand what they're for. Yeah. I don't understand this world we live in now. My pick is I'm going to do another shout out to Udemy, which is my favorite place to go learn things. I love Udemy because it has allowed me to learn a lot of skills, which I have no practical use for whatsoever, but they always do these sales on their courses for like 10 or 15 bucks. And like the most recent one, which I talked about before was, you know, for 15 bucks, I got a 40-hour course on Flutter. I think her name is Angela Yu. She's a works out of the, I think it's London App Factory is the company that produced it. And it's a wonderful course, very well laid out, and Flutter's this language, this framework that uses the Dart language that allows you to make apps for the iPhone and for Android. And, you know, you can start from knowing very little and then, you know, spend a week on it. At the end of it, you're able to make apps and do things like this. And that's the wonderful thing about Udemy. To me, it is this amazing. If they found like a bunch of ancient texts in some cave in the middle of somewhere that were hidden away from the Library of Alexandria, Udemy is more important than all of that. And I think it's one of these underappreciated things out there is how easy it is to acquire skills. They just got an investment, by the way, from a Japanese company, whatever, but Udemy's valuation now is like $2 billion. Good on them. Good on them for doing a great product and making this wonderful platform for learning stuff, all kinds of things.
That's only like 20% of Virgin Galactic. So.
It's true that. Type in podcasting, Bryce. Like type in there.
Sure. Podcasting here on udemy.com.
And we don't get a cut or anything from this, by the way.
How to start a podcast, the podcast masterclass, the top 8 ways to monetize by podcasting. How to start a podcast.
Yeah, you see some of these have really good reviews. Some of them have mediocre, but the reviews are great because like Amazon, they have... They're not producing the product themselves. There are other people producing the product. So there will be competing classes for something. There will be different versions of a thing, which is part of the reason why YouTube videos and things like this are better than university classes. Because if, you know, if UCLA says we're going to offer our online class on podcasting, it means they're going to go get one of their head, you know, communications professor, and he's going to do it. And if it completely sucks, it's still their official course for it. There is no feedback loop. There is no Brian or Bryce going through the comments and suggestions saying how to make this thing really better because it's a different system entirely versus things like Udemy and YouTube, things like that. It's why it's actually better in many cases than traditional education.
Yeah.
Cheaper too. You know, it's funny, just a side note. as they're talking about, like, if the trip to Mars, there's like, to be able to move to Mars, it's like, it's like $300,000. It's ridiculous. I'm like, people have student loans for that much now. Are we still having this argument that that's an expensive amount to say to, you know, be part of that? So save your money for Mars. Go to Udemy.
Yeah, man. Along that subject, if it's $300,000, I'm going to guess that labor for people on Mars is you're probably going to be easily in the six-figure a year range.
Yeah.
So, not that it's an indentured servitude thing, but I could totally see. I mean, we already see this with people who work on oil rigs and stuff. It's like you go out, 100%. You do a tour, you say, see in a couple of years, family, you bust your butt, and you come home $500,000 richer.
Yeah, that's that exactly. Like, there are certain industries that pay really well, but still have shortages, airline pilots, things like this. And if you have skills, some company's going to pay you to go there, you know? So,
yeah.
Anyhow, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.